Welcome to Sesshin, everyone. Everybody good? Nobody's ready to bolt and run yet? Yeah. I always liked Adriel McMullen's analogy of Sesshin being like trying to stuff a snake in a bamboo tube, this twisting, squirming snake of our mind, trying to put it in the tube of practice. And right at the beginning, at this stage of Sesshin, the kindest thing we can do for ourselves is to just put down the burdens of your everyday life. All of the complicated challenges of life, all of the problems of your life and the world. Just put it down. Remind yourself at the beginning of each sitting period of your aspiration for practice. Remind yourself now of your aspiration for practice. And open your heart, mind to the beneficent forces of the universe which manifest, whether we realize it or not, whether our twisting, turning mind realizes or not, which manifests as all of the circumstances and experiences of our lives. Make a vow to yourself. Set your intention to give your very best efforts to your practice in each period of Sesshin. Not to struggle to get in a struggle with the thinking mind. There's no good trying to stop the thinking mind with the thinking mind. For me, it's truly like pouring gas on a fire, thinking to try to stop thinking. Crazy, like fighting for peace. But if you take the oxygen away from a fire, it goes out. If you take the attention, the oxygen of attention away from the stories and thoughts and emotions and memories and plans that seem so important, the thinking mind starts to quiet down. If you turn the attention to the practice, practicing body with the body, listening to sounds at the sounds, the koan, if you practice disinterest in all of the problems, if you practice disinterest in your thinking mind, if you snub it, it starts to quiet down. Please use your time wisely. You've made this time, this opportunity to awaken. It seems to stretch out in front of us, but it'll pass in a flash. So easy to spend it problem solving. So easy to fritter it away. This evening, we're going to be beginning our first evening without a regular dinner meal. It's interesting how even the thought of fasting brings a complaining mind into stark relief. Oh my God, really? It's interesting, the Buddha is teaching in the Pali Canon, he always espoused the middle way. At the time of the Buddha, one stream of Hindu wisdom was that the soul or spirit was a spark of the divine in the body, and that the body had to be mortified, it had to be weakened, so that the spirit could free itself. And the Buddha himself underwent extensive ascetic practices. He almost starved himself to death. And his teaching is very clear that these ascetic practices are not the path to liberation. But he also taught very clearly that pursuing the mind of desire, trying to get ourselves comfortable, is not the way. This merry-go-round of desire and dissatisfaction is not the way. The Buddha said, you can't build a fire with soggy wood. You can't ignite the fire of your practice with the wet, soggy wood of a mind that seeks for satisfaction and pleasure. Take the middle way. Not trying to get yourself satisfied. Monks in the Theravadin tradition eat one meal a day and not afternoon. We're so used to this heavenly realm that we live in that even the thought of skipping supper for a few days causes anxiety, even though there's plenty of food, lunch and breakfast. Don't want to feel this body being hungry. A lovely old Japanese saying that's so apt to most of us in North America, that most of us eat four parts for the body and one part for the doctor. It's been my practice for a number of years now to fast at the beginning of Sesshin, usually for 3 days, sometimes for 5 days. Don't take any calories. It's not an ascetic practice for me. I do it partly as an equanimity practice because of this, brings this complaining mind into stark relief. But mostly in Sesshin, I do it because it clarifies the mind. It frames the intention for Zazen, and it clarifies Zazen. Not just a matter of endurance for the sake of endurance. So in this Sesshin, we've taken up the text of the Sutra of Complete Enlightenment. I have to say, whenever Roshi gives me something like this to read, it's pretty easy to feel pretty small, just at the profundity, the beauty of some of these texts. I'd like to read the first part of it to you. Thus have I heard. At one time, the Bhagavan, the Buddha, entered the samadhi of the great illuminating storehouse of spiritual penetration. The source, the great mystery, the unknowable ground of mind. This is the samadhi in which all of the Tathagatas brightly and majestically abide. It's the ground of the pure enlightenment of all sentient beings. The Buddha's body and mind were in the state of quiescent extinction, dropping off body and mind, where past, present, and future are intrinsically equal and identical. And his completeness filled all 10 directions and was in accord with everything without duality. From within this condition of non-duality, he caused various pure lands to appear. The Buddha was accompanied by 100,000 great bodhisattvas and mahasattvas. Chief among them were Bodhisattva Manjushri, Samantabhadra, the Bodhisattva of Universal Vision, Vajragarbha, Maitreya, Bodhisattva of Pure Wisdom, Bodhisattva at ease and majestic virtue, Bodhisattva of sound discernment, Bodhisattva cleansed of all karmic obstructions, Bodhisattva of universal enlightenment, Bodhisattva of complete enlightenment, and Bodhisattva foremost in virtue and goodness. Together with their retinues, they all entered samadhi, abiding in the Buddha's assembly of impartial equality. Thereupon, Bodhisattva Manjushri rose from his seat in the midst of the assembly, prostrated himself at the feet of the Buddha, circled the Buddha 3 times to the right, knelt down, joined his palms, and said, O world-honored one of great compassion, please expound to the multitudes that have come to this assembly the Tathagata's Dharma practice of the original arising purity of the causal ground, the mind ground. Please also expound to us how bodhisattvas may initiate this state of pure mind within the Mahayana and leave all illness. Pray teach us so that sentient beings in the future decline of the Dharma age who aspire to the Mahayana will not fall into erroneous views. And having said these views, he prostrated himself on the ground. He made the same request 3 times, each time repeating the same procedure. And at that time, the world-honored one said to Bodhisattva Manjushri, excellent, excellent, virtuous man, for the sake of the multitude of bodhisattvas, you've asked about the Tathagata's Dharma practice of the causal ground. for the benefit of all sentient beings in the decline of the Dharma age who aspire to Mahayana, you asked how they can attain correct abiding and not fall into erroneous views. Listen attentively now, and I will explain it to you. Virtuous man, the supreme Dharma king, the Buddha, possesses the method of the great Dharani called complete enlightenment, out of which emanates pure, true suchness, bodhi, and nirvana, as well as the paramitas to teach bodhisattvas. The original arising purity of the mind ground of the Tathagatas relies on the complete illumination of intrinsic enlightenment, which is pure in essence and permanently free from ignorance. Only then do the Tathagatas accomplish the Buddha path. What is ignorance? Virtuous man, since beginningless time, all sentient beings have had all sorts of delusions, like a disoriented person who's lost his sense of direction. They mistake the four great elements and the attributes of their bodies, and the conditioned impressions of the six sense objects as the attributes of their minds. They're like a man with an illness of the eyes who sees an illusory flower in the sky or a second moon. Virtuous man, there is in reality no flower in the sky, yet the sick man mistakenly clings to it. Because of his mistaken clinging, he's not only deluded about the intrinsic nature of the empty space, but also confused about the arising of the flower. Because of this false existence, he remains in the turning wheel of birth and death, of samsara. Hence, this is called ignorance. Virtuous man, this ignorance has no real substance. It's like a person in a dream. Though the person exists in the dream, when the dreamer awakens, there's nothing that can be grasped. Like an illusory flower in the sky that vanishes into empty space, one cannot say that there's a fixed place from which it vanishes. Why? Because there's no place from which it arises. Amidst the unarisen, all sentient beings deludedly perceive birth and extinction. Hence, this is called the turning wheel of birth and death. Virtuous man, one who practices complete enlightenment of the causal ground of the Tathagata, realizes that birth and extinction are like an illusory flower in the sky. Thus, there's no continuance of birth and death, and no body and mind that's subject to birth and death. This non-existence of birth and death and body and mind is so not as a consequence of contrived effort. It's so by its intrinsic nature. Their awareness of their non-existence is like empty space. That which is aware of the empty space is like the appearance of the illusory flower. However, one cannot say that the nature of this awareness is non-existent. Eliminating both existence and non-existence is in accordance with pure enlightenment. Why is that so? Because the nature of empty space is ever unmoving. Likewise, there is neither arising nor perishing within the Tathagatagarbha. It's free from conceptual knowledge and views. Like the nature of Dharma Dhatu, which is ultimate, wholly complete, and pervades all 10 directions, such as the Dharma practice of the Tathagata of the mind ground. Because of this intrinsic completeness, bodhisattvas within the Mahayana may give rise to pure bodhi mind. If sentient beings in the decline of the Dharma age practice accordingly, they will not fall into erroneous views. So this sutra takes place in a special location and time. But it's not a time and a place that's known to the rational mind. The location is a state of deep meditative concentration, absorption. At one time, the time is now, the eternal now, which is this present moment, the timeless realm. It takes place, this Dharma assembly of the Buddha and 100,000 great bodhisattvas, these deeply realized beings who embody the four bodhisattva vows that we chant every day, who manifest wisdom and compassion, and live their lives by the vow to awaken all beings fully, to realize themselves fully, and thereby to awaken all beings fully, to free them from delusion and suffering. And the first bodhisattva to question the Buddha is Bodhisattva Manjushri. I'm always grateful to enter at the door with the Manjushri statue. It's so beautiful. This young man holding a sword with which he cut through all delusions. Sometimes a lotus flower instead of a sword. Sometimes he also holds a scroll of wisdom. Sitting on a lion, it represents this beast of self that we know so well in our lives. It's ferocious looking, but it's tamed. The beast of self, tamed. It's our practice to tame the beast of self. So who are these bodhisattvas? Manjushri, Samantabhadra, Avalokiteshvara. Go look in the mirror. Go look in the mirror. Because apart from you, there's no Manjushri. And apart from you, there's no Buddha. Your life, seen for what it is a manifestation of wisdom and compassion. I say go look in the mirror, but I don't mean this self, this kind of aging 59-year-old guy that I see when I look in the mirror, this story I've made up. It's the looking in the mirror. It's the listening. It's the mirror of your eye, your awareness and attention. That's the eye of Manjushri Bodhisattva, the eye of Shakyamuni. It's this eye which feels the floor through your feet when you do kinhin. It sees the floor and the walls through your eyes and hears these words through your ears. It's this eye. It's the eye of Manjushri Bodhisattva. Listen, look. One big eye. And it's your hands that are the hands of these bodhisattvas. It's through your hands and eyes that the Dharma work is done, if we let the Dharma wheel turn us. So what's this place, then, where this sutra is spoken? This place doesn't exist apart from you. Copenhagen Institute of Quantum Mechanics, pretty venerable institution, says there's no reality in the absence of observation. Amazing. This place where the truth of this sutra manifests has no name. This location has no coordinates. Might say it's an organ. But of course, organ is just an idea. Klatskin eye is just a thought construct. This place isn't south or north of the 49th parallel. When you look directly, there's just this one vast place, this one vast here. We chant the Heart Sutra in the morning. Called the Maha Prajna Paramita Sutra. Maha. Sometimes we translate it as great. I think more properly vast, not big, not like Los Angeles is bigger than Klatskin Eye. Vast, in that there's nowhere this place doesn't extend. Where is not here? Where does here not extend? You might say, well, how about Vancouver? Great Vow Zen Monastery is in Vancouver, and that's true. And yet it's all here. Like water poured into different containers, all just water, like waves on the ocean, each separate and unique. And yet, just salt water. This location does not exist apart from you. Where does it not extend? Of what can you not be aware? This location is the samadhi of realization that Buddhas and all of these great bodhisattvas share, sharing the same vision. This location is the reality of the present moment that we practice in Zazen, that practices us. It's the manifestation of your essential nature, that which is common to each moment of your life, to everything that arises. A place that has no boundary, maha. There's no inside or outside. It's completely still, but contains all activity. And this place, this location, doesn't exist on its own apart from your life. This place and the living of this place are the same in this boundless field of awareness. The great Hong Zhe says it thus. The field of boundless emptiness is what exists from the very beginning. You must purify, cure, grind down, or brush away all the tendencies you have fabricated into apparent habits. Then you can reside in the clear circle of brightness. Utter emptiness has no image. It doesn't rely on anything. Just expand and illuminate the original truth, unconcerned by external conditions. Not a single thing exists. In this field, birth and death don't appear. The deep source, transparent down to the bottom, shines radiantly and responds unencumbered to each speck of dust without becoming its partner. A still mind, a still silent mind, isn't the goal of Zen. But the mind has to be completely still to realize this place. Say has to be. There's certainly practices that work with the thinking mind, but in my own experience, the mind has to be completely still. We're all different, but for me, completely still to realize this place. Still and completely absorbed in itself. Completely still and deeply introspective. Not just quiet and dull. Without preference or aversion. You have to give yourself up completely to this practice. Completely engage whatever arises without aversion. Be willing to experience all of the sensations of the body, whatever arises. When the mind is still and absorbed and introspective, then this place shines forth, it becomes obvious. Then body and mind can drop away. It shines forth brilliantly. Vasui says, like a coal black goose standing on a field of snow. We talk about boundless mind and awareness and awareness and awareness. But don't get confused about this. The eye can't see itself. It's easy to mistake this consciousness of things and ideas and feelings and sensations for the essential nature of mind. Oh yeah, I get it. I'm sitting in wide open awareness. I'm aware of awareness. I'm aware of this and that. I'm aware of the boundless mind. Body and mind dropping away is prior to all of that, prior to any I am. Not I am and not I am. During these first days, it can be a challenge to stabilize the mind, to hold the attention steady on the object of meditation, to bring the attention back over and over again to the sound, to the breath. Forget who the wag is who said, you know, practice is a very easy matter. When the attention wanders, you just bring it back over and over again to the breath. And after 400,000 or 500,000 times, it gets a little easier. You know. So what's the time at which this sutra is spoken? What's the time? At one time, it says, thus have I heard, at one time. What is this time? Scholars say it was written down more than 1,000 years after the death of the Buddha. It's kind of meaningless in terms of the truth, the teaching of the sutra. These teachings of the Buddha manifest in the present. It said that the great Nagarjuna discovered the Heart of Wisdom Sutra, hidden away. These texts are hidden away sometimes, revealed, revealing themselves when needed as a source of renewed wisdom. Sometimes hidden geographically, sometimes discovered in the mind of some advanced practitioner who discovers it, writes it down. So the sutra says, at one time, this at one time is a place outside time, the eternal now, the timeless realm. This at one time doesn't correspond so well with our ordinary everyday view of time. In our ordinary everyday view of time, we see ourselves as continuing through time. We see things as continuing through time. We see events as becoming other events. We see ourselves as having a lifespan. I see myself as the same Hoban as 10 years ago, just older. I see myself getting older. I see myself as the same Hoban who was driving in his car coming down to the monastery yesterday. I was driving my car, now I'm sitting here in the Zendo. Before I was doing this, now I'm doing that. We see ourselves moving through time from one set of circumstances to another set of circumstances. We see our circumstances as changing. We see time as some medium we move through, 60 seconds in a minute, 60 minutes in an hour, 7 days in a week, so on and so forth. Maybe 80 years in a lifetime if I'm lucky. We see time as a dimension or medium that things move through. We see continuity of things. We see them changing depending on what came before, arising out of what came after. We see winter is becoming spring. When we sit zazen in the morning, we see the dark becoming daytime. In the evening, we see the daytime becoming nighttime. It was light and now it's dark. We see ourselves as living through the changing season. Spring becomes summer. We see birds flying. We see trees moving in the breeze. We see ourselves becoming sad or happy. We see ourselves alive and then becoming dead. We see time as flowing. We see one thing being the cause of something else. This happened because I did that. I always think it's amusing now. I used to see time as a medium of exchange. As a lawyer, I used to bill in 6-minute increments. Pick up the phone. Talk to somebody, put it down. Oh, that was a 0.2, write it down on the timesheet. We even see time as something we can save. Burn through our lives. We burn through some task. I don't like doing this so much. This is work. This is hard. I'll save time by doing this faster. Now I have more time to do what I want to do, some recreational activity maybe. We see time as something that flies away, flies like an arrow. We see time as something that can be wasted or killed. I certainly wasted and killed lots of time. I keep procrastinating. I meant to practice, but I never got to it. I meant to practice every day, but I just haven't made the time. Sometimes we have this sense that I've wasted my whole life doing this when I should have been doing that. We rush from one thing to another. No time to appreciate the wonder and amazement of this present moment, which is the only moment of our lives. We see time as a medium that moves apart from the flow of events. We see our lives and events moving against what seems like a background of time. Things coming and going, arising and abiding. And there's some truth to all of this, but it's only part of the story. In the Genjo Koan, Dogen Zenji says, when you first seek the Dharma, you imagine you're far away from its environments, but the Dharma is already correctly transmitted. When the Dharma is already correctly transmitted, you are immediately your original self. When you ride in a boat and you watch the shore, you might assume that the shore is moving, but when you keep your eyes closely on the boat, you can see that the boat moves. Similarly, if you examine things with a confused body and mind, you might suppose that your mind and nature are permanent. But when you practice intimately and return to where you are, it will be clear that nothing at all has an unchanging self. If you look at your watch, if you're allowed to wear a watch, you might say, oh, it's almost 4 o'clock now, and here I'm listening to Hoban drone on. What is he going on about? We started sitting at 3:30, and now it's 4. But really, 3:30 doesn't exist anywhere on its own. 4 o'clock is listening to Hoban talking. 3:30 was sitting down. There's only this moment, this flashing into existence of this present moment, whole and complete in itself. Trees are time, listening is time, cars are time, your time, this moment is time. Apart from this, right now, time is just an idea. We create a history with our minds. We create memories in a future. We create things continuing through time. But there's just this, now this, whole and complete in itself. Not things moving through time, but just this. Everything included in this moment of time, all of space, all of the past, everything that has been, everything that will be, all of it. The universe manifesting as this moment of your life, Maha. Whole of your life. Is there anything that isn't included in this moment? Where else would it be? Where else would it be? This present moment, which is the most important moment there will ever be, the only moment there will ever be, the whole of your life. It seems like there's something that continues. Like Hoban continues from one moment to the next. Dogen Zenji says, firewood becomes ash and it doesn't become firewood again. You don't suppose that the ash is future and the firewood past. You should understand that firewood abides in the phenomenal expression of firewood, which fully includes past and future and is independent of past and future. Ash abides in the phenomenal expression of ash, which fully includes future and past. Just as firewood doesn't become firewood again after it's ash, you don't return to birth after death. It's an established teaching in the Buddha Dharma to deny that birth turns into death. It's an unshakable teaching that death does not turn into birth. Birth is an expression complete in the moment, and death is an expression complete in the moment. They're like winter and spring. You don't call winter the beginning of spring, nor summer the end of spring. But yet it seems like there's something continuing. My life becomes death, spring becomes summer. It seems like there's something that continues and changes, that moves from the past to the present to the future. It's me. But if you look closely, like the boat and the shore, we can see what's permanent and what's impermanent. See that there's nothing continuing through time. Just this, and now this. A teacher once said, there's three men propped up by a single staff, and three men that sleep in a single bed. Who are those three? None of whom exists even for an instant of time. This practice, this Zazen practice, isn't a developmental activity. It isn't a matter of gradual growth or development. Your Buddha nature isn't some seed that you water and cultivate and that grows over time into the fullness of your own magnificence. It isn't a matter of purifying yourself so that you're transformed into something better. This year is 2016 Hoban, a new, better Hoban, twice the horsepower, twice the man he ever was before. It's not a matter of getting rid of. It's a matter of realizing what is. It's a matter of looking deeply into the nature of your own mind, allowing the mind to be completely still. Then look directly into the essence of your own mind. What is it that's the same about all aspects of this moment? What is it that's always constant? What is it that's always aware? Aware of the sensations of the body, breathing, aware of sound at the sound, aware of thought and emotion, of taste. What is it? Your realization of your own essential nature, your own essence of mind, isn't something that can be developed in the future, built up and realized in the future. It's not some potential that can be cultivated. It's manifesting right here and now, as this moment of your life, as this floor, as that which sees the floor, looking through your eyes, that looks at your eyes. It manifests as this present moment. It manifests as all of the circumstances of your life that you experience as outside. It manifests as all your thoughts and emotions, perceptions and sensations. We're not in any way separate from the circumstances of our lives. That which is aware and that of which it is aware is one thing. In this timeless realm of samadhi, there's no inside and no outside, just this illuminating awareness. The meaning of our lives doesn't lie outside the ordinary circumstances of our lives. There's no backstory or subtext. What we experience as the ordinary circumstances of our lives. What we experience as suffering is the dynamic activity of our life. Our life in its full magnificence. Maha. Manifesting as this moment. Insight, realization, isn't a matter of rational, verbal understanding. It's like a zafu. What's the meaning of a zafu? I'm sure there have been whole treatises written on the meaning of a zafu. But these words have nothing to do with a zafu. The meaning of a zafu only becomes manifest in using it, in sitting on it. These lives of ours are something to be lived, something to be engaged. And the search for meaning in our lives is satisfied when we engage this present moment completely. There's a story about a student who was walking with his teacher one day, and a flock of wild geese flew by, and the teacher said, "What's that?" And the student said, "Wild geese, master." The master said, "Well, where'd they go?" And the student said, "They flew away." And the master grabbed the student's nose and twisted it. He cried out, "Ow!" The master said, "Do you still say they flew away?" The next day, the master entered the hall to give a Dharma talk. When all the monks had assembled, the student went forward and rolled up the bowing mat in front of the teacher's seat. And the teacher got down from the seat and went back to his room, and the student followed him. The master turned to him and said, "Why'd you roll up the mat before I'd even said a word?" The student said, "Yesterday you hurt my nose." And the teacher said, "Where in your mind are you keeping yesterday's matter?" And the student said, "Well, today my nose doesn't hurt anymore." And the master said, "You understand today's matter very well. What is it that didn't fly away? What is it that's aware of those geese?" Everyone here has challenges in their lives. Seeing what's permanent, seeing what's impermanent as permanent, what doesn't exist as a separate self, seeing ourselves as things, as permanent, as continuing through time, having a lifespan. We see ourselves as existing on the backside of our eyes, right? You know, I'm looking out and there's this backside, there's this cavern of consciousness, and that's me back here. We see ourselves as existing on the backside of our eyes, looking through our eyes, looking out. There's a me in here, and there's all of these challenges out there. What to do about it? More movies, a better lover, a better job, get things lined up the way I think they'll make me happy, go from these unhappy circumstances to happy circumstances. It manifests in all different ways, doesn't it? Manifests in the Dharma as well. Looking for better set of circumstances. Sometimes people try to retreat from life, withdraw from the world. But how do you withdraw from the world? We all still have to eat. We all still get sick. The answer, my friends, is not to retreat from life, not to escape, not to try to find some better, happier place, not to try to fix things. The answer is to choose this moment, to choose this moment. And when you see that there's no me on the backside, that there's just this, and indeed, this moment chooses itself. There's just this moment. And it's not what I want to do, but what's being asked of me. Not what's in it for me, not how I want it. But what needs to be done right now? Anything? Is everything perfect as it is? Does anything need to be cleaned? So please practice diligently, my friends. This early days of Sesshin, this early hours of Sesshin. Practice diligently and use your time wisely. In these first days, the first couple of days particularly, using your time wisely very often means to rest the body, to be kind to yourself. We all come to Sesshin exhausted from our ordinary lives. So use the rest periods to rest the body. But please be meticulous in your practice. Remind yourself of these vows that you've made. Give yourself up to the practice. Above all, please don't entertain yourself. You practice diligently. If you turn the Dharma wheel, it feels like a creaky old wheel these first couple of days of Sesshin. But when it starts to turn, man, does it hum along. So give yourself up to the practice. Please practice diligently. Thank you.